This is the Cubs-related podcast presented by Cubs Insider. Today is Sunday, and I just got back from Sloan Park after seeing my second spring training game. I still can't believe spring training is here. I did see a lot of dejected Indians fans today, and I just can't help but feel empathetic towards really everything that happened. Corey's with me. Corey, what do you got for us?
Well, you know, and that game today ends in a tie, but, you know, so unfortunately the Indians don't get to exact their revenge. I know that would have been just as satisfying, right? This spring training game is basically the same as Game 7 of the World Series.
Of course. Now, I did see Raji Davis in Oakland yesterday, and maybe it was just my perception, but it felt as if he was... I don't know. I don't want to say an extra edge, but he was definitely going full throttle. He got on base. He steals second. He steals third. He's taking these check swings with like a weird stare on his face. I don't know.
I don't blame him for not being able to shake that one. I think we would be in the same boat. But I was mentioning to you before, I think the most fun thing about these first 2 days of spring training was that the Cubs do a split squad to open things up against the Giants and then another game against the A's. And that lineup against the A's is a really solid lineup. And I think one that if, you know, that was like what they had to go into the season with, it would be like, yeah, this is pretty good. And that was minus Schwarber, Baez, Montero, Almora, amongst other, you know, smaller pieces. But you know, like all those guys are playing in a separate game in the lineup still. Hayward, Bryant, Rizzo, Zobrist, Russell, Contreras, Jay, Caesar, and then Ian right. Happ. It's like, yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah, and then even today, most of the guys like Rizzo and Bryant didn't even play. But, I mean, even guys like Eloy Jimenez and Ian Happ played. there's never a dull moment, even in spring training games for offense. And... But I do want to mention before I forget. So I went to batting practice yesterday, and I saw pretty much all the guys like really up close. And I swear to God, I've seen Almora in BP over the last maybe 3 or 5 years, and he never hit with this much power as he did yesterday. He must have hit 10 homers in 25 swings. There was a moment where he hit 4 homers in 5 swings. Got out of the cage, and then got back in the cage in the second round and just hit off, started that round with 3 more homers. And, you know, I'm with maybe 7 or 8 fans the next time. You're like, who the hell is this? Mm-hmm. This is not the same Almora.
Well, and I'm not sure if we ever got, like, the exact number on it, but he definitely came into camp looking a bit buffer and stronger.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think he's going to be a guy to watch, and sort of in a similar vein to the way we talk about Hayward, but if he can put together even modest offense with that defense, you know, he's a real player in this league.
Right. And then speaking of Hayward, we finally have more of those in-game swing
to obsess over.
Yeah. It is probably going to be a point of obsession, but for the most part, We have more at bats today. I see some slight differences, and we wrote about this on Cubs Insider, but nothing as drastic as you might imagine going into an offseason and working, you know, on the swing day in and day out. And granted, it is the first weekend of spring training, and adjusting is still a real thing, but I don't know. I don't see something... That's really standout.
Yeah, I think that, and I'm sure you'll get into it in a second here, and you did in the posts, but there's definitely little nuances, and for sure there's differences.
Oh,
right?
There's differences, for
but
sure.
But I think that just the amount of, you know, and not to keep using the word, but obsession that has been kind of made over this in the media, and it's, you know, even translated to the national media, I think a lot of people were expecting like a totally different person. And,
right.
You know, just to that end, and I think that first game is even more disappointing, not disappointing, but unfortunate, I think is a better word, in that the two results that he gets are basically the exact results we sat through last year, right? A first pitch, weak flyout to, I think, center was that first at bat, and then a, you know, a harder hit ground ball, but to second, it did get a run in. So, you know, situationally, that's fine. But I think it's easy for a lot of fans to come away, you know, a little disappointed. I think they were, you know, maybe expecting some big noticeable change and he would be hitting ropes in spring training or something like that. And, you know, I would say I'm a bit in that group as well. You know, I was sort of hoping for something a little more standout. But I would qualify with, you know, he's been there in Arizona for, I think, a few months, maybe like 3 months or so now. Mm-hmm. And this stuff takes time, and I know nobody wants to hear that. And I know that, you know, they'll come back with how much money he's making and all this other stuff. But this is the first live pitching that he's faced that's actual competition. Obviously, he's facing live pitching in spring training. We saw him. I know John Ferlise, who's with us on CubsInsider.com, got a good video of him taking Lackey deep during one of their workouts, but obviously facing another team who's scouting against you and all that other stuff is a different sort of situation. Mm-hmm. And this stuff takes time, and it's tough to know exactly what they have him working on. And I think we've said this before in relation to spring training, but you just never know what's going on here. They're not really out there necessarily playing the game as you normally would. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very possible that Hayward for the first five games, and I'm totally making this up, but just as an example, like he could go up there trying to drive the ball the other way. And that's just something that he's working on right now. Right. You know, and so this stuff takes time. They're going to work on it all through spring. They're going to keep doing their workouts. So while I'm definitely in agreement, you know, there's not a kind of like earth shattering difference in the swing from that first video that Darnell McDonald posted to now, or, you know, even looking at last year. But I would say still stick with him. They're putting in the work. We don't know exactly every little detail that they're working on and what exactly their overall plan is for him. But I think we have to get him out there in front of live pitching, you know, for this whole month that spring training is before we can really truly evaluate the differences and the progress that he's made.
Right. I mean, just following this whole Jason Hayward swing reconstruction, you learn more about hitting in the process as a fan.
Sure.
So that's been fun to see. But it sounds as if the two major adjustments they were trying to make Hayward adopt, one is keeping a more consistent hand grip, whereas in years past, more so last year, he used to change his hand grip right before he started his swing. And so that resulted in his inability to keep the barrel really through the zone in an appropriate amount of time. And so the one area to look for is really that hand grip, to seeing if it changes or if it looks different. And so Evan and I were talking about this, and he posted on Cubs Insider this morning in more detail. But just on the standalone shots, the standstills, there looks to be a difference in grip position. So he's wearing the same batting gloves. So I say that because it's very easy for us to notice a change, because his hand, the batting gloves, have two different colors. And very conveniently, the colors change right at about the knuckles. So you can actually look at the color of his batting gloves, and you'll see in the post. But if you see more red, then that's typically, it looks to be a good thing. Because last year, you saw mostly blue. So
right.
It looked as if he was wringing out a towel, if you're envisioning that with me. So that's one area to look at if you are curious about following his swing mechanics. Now, the second one is his backside, really his hips, going through the zone. So, Corey, I don't know if you remember this or if anyone who's followed a lot of his videos with us throughout the spring, he did this like Happy Gilmore type drill. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So basically, you run through home plate and you swing. And Sean Casey specifically mentioned this on MLB Network, which is why it got my attention. And they compared video of those particular swings with his swings from last year. And you can kind of see how his backside, that back toe, it like stays nailed into the ground. Whereas in these practice videos, and even during the live BP with Lackey and some of the pitchers, Hayward's back foot comes off the ground. And that suggests that he's getting his hips through and able to turn more and lift the ball with more authority. So just in these last two games, a lot of these different swings, you don't see that same type of hip motion through the zone. You see that back foot nailed in just like last year. So, and again, maybe we don't really know exactly the goals of the of these at-bats, but two areas to look for: one, that grip change; two, that backside. Sean Casey pointed it out. Go look at the MLB Network video. I think it's great stuff. But
right, and not to, you know, and just a final thought on this, because I don't want to harp on it too much. We're probably going to talk about it every time I'm here. but you know, remember, and we've said this before, but even if these changes seem small, if they result in 10 or 15 better struck balls the whole year, you could be looking at a completely different player. And I know that seems small, and you can break all that down however you want, but even with a little better luck and putting better contact on a handful of pitches, mm-hmm. can really change the way those numbers look, you know. And I don't think anybody is expecting him to hit 320 or anything like that. But, you know, you get a couple more hits to fall, hit a couple more balls, really good on a line, and, you know, you can be just be looking at a way more valuable player. So
he has the highest defensive runs above average score of all time for right fielders.
Jason Hayward is an elite fielder and an elite base runner. And if you can just bump those offensive numbers up a little bit, I don't think anybody will really be talking about him anymore.
Right.
Certainly in the negative connotation. But to segue, anything else that has you're out there in Arizona, anything yeah. else that has stood out to you in these first couple days of spring training for those of us that can't see every minute on TV?
I've gone to every spring training probably for the last 18 years or so, even when I was a small little child. But more so in these last 4 or 5 years, especially with the opening of Sloan Park, you can see a noticeable difference in just the fan atmosphere, the sheer quantity of fans. I mean, Sloan Park usually draws very well every single year. But this year, as you can imagine, there's so many more tailgaters, so many more people at practice. I mean, I remember having to go to Finch Park when they were at Hohokam, and that was maybe one of like six people there. Now they have to close off other areas of the field, the practice field, so they can have the players walk around and whatnot. So that's pretty cool. But actually talking about the baseball side of things, one thing that I was surprised to see was how involved Brandon Hyde was. So he basically runs most of these practices, and it sounds as if he organizes most of it. And so he's out there doing fungos, making sure the base running drills are appropriate. He's walking between fields. So he's like the main honcho with all of this. So that was pretty cool. And then Kawasaki, as you can imagine, is probably one of the funniest human beings on those fields. Anytime he gets a ground ball, even if it's just like a fungo, he is screaming, running around, screaming, "Nice play, nice play, nice play," every single time. It's one of the funniest things. And then Javi obviously is just smooth sailing, as you can imagine. And whenever they try to turn another place, Javi's doing these like weird, like footwork type stuff. I can't even explain it. It's almost like he's just. It's like a dunk contest for him.
Do you notice from having been there in years past, can you feel the kind of change in how much people love Javi?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even in batting practice, he comes out of the cage and people are just screaming, "Javi, Javi, Javi."
Right. And not that people didn't love him before, but he wasn't a national celebrity, I guess, like he is now.
No, I mean, it is for sure different. And then even Schwarber, obviously with the heroics he had in the World Series, but all of these guys, I mean, I would argue, Corey, that they get more attention than even Chris Bryant. I swear to God. And we know Chris is more of a laid back type B personality. But I mean, the guys who are very outgoing, even Wilson Contreras, they get the majority of the love. And so I was surprised by that. But even Kawasaki, like I was talking about earlier, he gets a lot of love too. So the fans are very aware. And then what else? Oh, as far as some other lower level players, Jaime Candelario looks bigger to me. Again, I've been following him for the last 3 years or so, just BP and the AFL and whatnot. So he actually looks bigger. Swing looks good. More pop than years past. So that's been fun to watch. Eloy Jimenez is basically, he's going to get comparisons to Jorge Soler because of the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, even just in the footage we're getting, he's real fun to watch. I mean, he just kills the ball.
Yeah, and he has really, really smooth, relaxed approaches to at-bats. Kind of like what Soler didn't do. So in a way, they reflect one another, but in reality, they're actually quite different. Yeah, that's kind of the takeaways. Any questions in particular that you have?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just interesting. You know, you've been there a lot, and, you know, obviously this is a different sort of version of all this this year. I know a lot of people were saying how surreal it is to come to these games for so many years, and they get there yesterday and the World Series trophies on the field. So
right.
That's obviously a bit different for everyone, but yeah, it's as I've mentioned to you, I'm not the biggest spring training guy. I think mostly just I out of maybe like a protection for myself, because I know if I get too involved in it, I'll be fretting over every little detail and every single thing. Right, and I don't want to. You shouldn't. And so I pay attention, you know, make sure everybody's healthy. But beyond that, I kind of just let them do their work, and I'll catch them in April. But so one thing, you know, and you mentioned him, but since we didn't get to talk about it the last time we spoke to you, Joe Maddon says that Kyle Schwarber is his man to lead off for the 2017 Chicago Cubs. Now, I don't think he specified too much beyond that. So I guess I'm saying I don't know if he meant literally every game or how much playing time Schwarber is going to get, but Kyle Schwarber is going to lead off for this team. And we had said before, it was one of those things that Maddon mentioned way too much for him not to do it.
Even in 2015, you know?
Right. This is just something that is in his head that he wants to try. And I'm all for it. I think that they don't have the traditional guy to lead off, and I definitely don't mean someone that's fast. If you are still of the belief that the leadoff hitter needs to be fast, you really got to get off of that. It's just not really how this works anymore. It works, you know, like when Juan Pierre was lighting the league on fire, it works because he can't hit. And that's why he needed to be fast. But it just isn't the way it works. And, you know, I'd also point out that Dexter Fowler isn't really that fast, compared to someone like Billy Hamilton or whatever. Sure. It's not like, you know, Dexter Fowler is a speed demon. Dexter Fowler was the leadoff hitter because of his approach. And, you know, so I don't think that the Cubs necessarily have a guy that kind of screams to go in that position. And I think that Schwarber being there is fine. You know, at the end of the day, I kind of look at it as the leadoff hitter is the guy who is going to get the most at bats and who can kind of set the tone at the beginning of the game. And I'm certainly fine if that person is Schwarber. I know, you know, you looked a little more in depth at this, but just one thing that I was looking at on the Baseball Reference Play Index, which is a wonderful, wonderful little tool that you can play around with for days on end. You can get lost in some of that information. But the Cubs played, I think it was 76 games last year, where their pitching staff gave up two runs or less. So I think that essentially, and Maddon has said as much, you know, and one of the slogans for this year is DPEAT. And I, you know, that's part of the philosophy here. Their offense is loaded with talent, but what this team wins games on and I think is the backbone of this team is defense and pitching. And when you're looking at it going, okay, we're in a lot of games where three runs would win this game, it should be pretty easy for this offense to score three runs. And when you throw Schwarber, Bryant, Rizzo, Zobrist in some order at a pitcher to start the game, there's probably going to be a good handful of games where the Cubs can get on the board in the first inning and just try to shut it down.
Yeah, and it changes the dynamics of the entire game when you do score first. Maddens alluded to it more with emphasis in the playoffs last year, but he'll be the first to tell you scoring first sets the tone. But what does he actually mean by setting the tone? Well, not only does mentally it help, but it doesn't allow the manager, the opposing manager, to maximize some of his bullpen usages. So if you're losing by one or two runs, you're not going to exhaust maybe that higher leverage guy right away. And there are ways and strategies that are dependent upon whether or not who scores early, in addition to just bullpen usage. So, and in particular, like double switches and whatnot. So hopefully that makes more sense, even though I'm talking more general. But just to give you an example to make it more clear. So if you're in the fifth or sixth inning, right, the Cubs are up 1-0, 2-0, whatever it is, the opposing pitcher spot comes up in the batting order, and there's a guy in second base with two outs. Now, normally, let's say the Cubs are facing a good pitcher. If this was a tie game or if the Cubs were losing, that pitcher would still be in the game, no doubt. He would take that at bat, even though there's a man on second base. But because the other team is losing, maybe the opposing manager will take him out, exhaust one of his pinch hitters, and as a result, the Cubs get to face a pitcher who's really not as capable as a starting pitcher. So hopefully that makes sense. That's what I mean by scoring first. It sets the tone mentally, yes, but it changes the way the other manager manages the rest of the game. But Corey, just to go into more detail, and we talked about this several times, but the difference between Schwarber batting leadoff and cleanup is not as significant as you might imagine. Yes, you want to give Schwarber more at-bats, and in theory, that's good. And just on some like general analyses I ran, it looks like it's going to add about 8 runs in a full season. So Schwarber batting leadoff adds 8 runs in comparison to Zobrist batting leadoff and Schwarber batting cleanup. So there's a difference there. But in reality, 8 runs is about a little bit less than one win. And when you actually factor in, you know, the randomness of baseball and really just odd sequencing throughout the season, it's almost nothing. There's really no difference. It sounds weird, but there's really not that much of a difference here.
I've mentioned to you before, but this is something that, you know, even in the front office internships and work that I've done, this is a common thought. Like, you can definitely do it wrong. It's not to say that, like, there's no way the Cubs could structure a lineup that would produce, like, a significant amount of less runs. It's possible. But when you're talking about, you know, where does Schwarber, Bryant, Zobrist, and Rizzo hit, it's pretty negligible. Yeah. And like you were just saying, you get into sequencing where there's just going to be some years where a lot of the biggest RBI situations end up with, like, the 7 hitter. And it just is the way it is. You know, that's just baseball. Like, sometimes the sequencing is just going to be different. And, you know, I think that's one of the areas where having Joe Maddon is so important, because you can adjust those things and move things around. You know, if there's sort of trends that are showing up with, you know, Schwarber hitting leadoff and all that other stuff. So, well, but at the end of the day, yeah, it's not going to be something that is going to cost them, you know, a significant amount of runs or gains or anything like that.
Well, even when Tom Tango was writing about this topic in his book, he basically...
The book?
The book, yes.
If you haven't read that, you really need to.
And if you don't have the energy to read the entire thing, just read like a chapter or two. It's pretty
good. Yeah, it's a really, really good way if you kind of read some of this stat stuff and are a little overwhelmed or, you know, kind of put off by it. It's a really good way. The way the book is, it's weird to talk about it because the book is literally called The Book.
Yeah.
And but it picks, I think it's like 9 or 10 kind of big baseball issues. And it just sort of explains how you would look at it from an advanced stats perspective. So it talks, I know one of them is lineup construction. I think hot and cold streaks, is that a real thing, is one of the chapters. I think bunting might be in there. But it just, you know, is a really, I think, accessible way to see how advanced metrics approach some of these actual, you know, kind of like hot button issues in the game of baseball.
Yeah, and then just to go off of that too, Bill James, who is also one of the pioneers of baseball stats, he has one quote which just sticks with me and is, I think, the champion quote of the entire advanced baseball world.
I think I know where you're going, but I'm not
positive. Maybe. But anyway, just to paraphrase what Bill James said, is he basically wants to create a mess. And he knows that, like, whatever type of analysis he runs, it's basically a mess. It's not perfect. And his job is just to take that mess and then hand it over to the next guy to maybe make that mess a little bit more neater, even though that will still be a mess, and it just keeps going down the line. So whenever we talk about any of these advanced stats, I never want to talk in absolutes, because the people who made these stats cautioned fans, people like me, to interpret them with some of the limitations in mind.
Well, the best is there's certain, I think, definitions. I think for WAR is one of the biggest ones, where if you go to the Fangraphs glossary and read the description for WAR, it explicitly tells you not to use it certain ways,
right.
You know, not to use it in certain comparisons. And that's all people do.
No.
You know, so sometimes it's not the stats people's fault. They made it very clear what they were doing and how to do it. I thought you were going to go with the Bill James, Ricky Henderson quote.
Which one is that?
He says something, you know, because he was looking at the, you know, what percentage you need to hit to be increasing the run value, you know, by stealing bases.
Right.
And I think in some of those years, you know, I think it's around like 75%, or it was. You know, in some of those years, Ricky Henderson was a bit lower than that because he was just doing it all the time. And I think he said something about, you know, this guy's costing his team runs with how many times he gets thrown out, and they want to, you know, call him the best player ever or something like that. I'd have to look up the quote, but it's something to that effect.
That's great.
But yeah, anyway, lineup construction, mostly negligible. But just, you know, trying to get in Joe Maddon's head, I think, about you know, where this fits. I did want to bring up an interesting point, and this is, you know, ad-libbed on the podcast. We didn't discuss this beforehand, but I did read an interesting thought on Schwarber leading off, and it might have even been a comment on one of our posts, but that with him leading off the game, that first at bat is never going to have someone on base, so he's always going to have to hit against the shift in that first at bat. And I didn't necessarily think that was a reason not to do it, but I did think it was an interesting point.
Well, yeah, I'd actually never thought about that now until you just mentioned it. I'll have to go look and see more specifically where Schwarber likes to hit the ball. I imagine he is more of a pull hitter, but I don't want to say he is on a podcast unless I know for sure. But you have to remember, too, and Maddon actually says this all the time. The leadoff hitter leads off the game one time, mostly one time. And then he comes around, typically with men on base. Not as much as the other guys, like 2, 3, and 4 hitters, but there are men on base. So the amount of times that the leadoff hitter actually has at-bats to lead off an inning, it's not a total of 600 plate appearances, right?
Right, of course.
Right, and just last year, the leadoff hitter came on with men on base 260 times or so. So you can, I mean, and that's going to increase if the Cubs bat the pitcher eighth. So let's say 300 times the leadoff hitter comes up with a man on base. For Schwarber, that's going to be like 60% of his at-bats or so. So will the shift make that much of a difference? I don't know. I really don't know.
I just thought it was an interesting kind of, I didn't want our analysis to be you know, totally like, yeah, you know.
Right, right.
But and also, you know, one of my first thoughts when I read it, I was like, yeah, that's an interesting thought and something to consider. But then I think of his single in, you know, to start the rally in the 10th inning of Game 7 of the World Series, where the Cubs win the World Series.
They win the World Series, correct, yep.
You know, he hits the ball hard enough most times that it sort of doesn't matter if they shift.
Exactly.
They kind of have to be literally exactly where he hits the ball.
Right.
Or he's hitting it too hard for someone to, you know, get to anyway. So,
right.
But yeah, I just thought it was an interesting point.
And Madden is the perfect person to oversee the situation. And going back to Tango's book, the takeaway when he talked about lineup construction is it's best to play the matchups. And who better to play the matchups than Joe Madden? So,
yep.
I don't even know if we'll see a consistent static lineup. I'm sure we'll see Schwarber lead off to start, and depending on how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But, you know, these lineups, I know people get so obsessed with them, and I get obsessed with them too, I'll admit, especially, you know, if I play like a video game, for example, I'll get obsessed with them. But it's not as significant as you think. So don't, and it goes back to even Javi Baez's playing time. Like, how do you see Javi playing all these games with all this talent? He's going to get in. I guarantee you he's going to get in. But moving on, now we saw three games. None of the main pitchers pitched for the most part. We did see Montgomery throw. We saw Rob Zastrzyzny throw, although it was only one inning. Brett Anderson is going to throw tomorrow against the White Sox. I'll start that. Presumably, he'll get one inning or two innings. And then we won't see the big dogs like Arrieta, Hendricks, Lackey, Lester until next week, it sounds like. I swear I heard Madden say they may get like two or three starts. I want to say two starts the entire spring training, but I've dreamt of similar statements in the past that were not true, so take that with a grain of salt. But any thoughts on what to look for in the next week or so, Corey, with all these players?
I mean, I think, you know, again, just making sure that everybody's healthy is the first thing, and we'll have to kind of let it play out. Like, I wouldn't, you know, I didn't think Montgomery looked great yesterday, but it's his first inning of the spring training, so I'm, you know, not really going to hold him to it. And, you know, you just kind of got to give these guys a chance to get stretched out and loosened up and back into the swing of things with live competition, you know, and sometimes it takes time. But I think, you know, for me, the most interesting thing for me right now is watching Eloy Jimenez and Ian Happ. Because, you know, I think everybody else is doing their thing. I think the Hayward thing is interesting to watch, but even, you know, already I'm like terrified of how much pressure is being, you know, put on him. So we'll just, you know, we'll see how that plays out, keep an eye on it. But I think the most fun thing is, you know, to kind of look at the guys who we're not really sure of, you know, who they are yet, and kind of watching them develop and thinking of how they're going to fit in the future. You know, it was a lot of fun. Ian Happ, I think, was the DH in that game yesterday, hitting ninth.
He was, and his first at bat, double down the line.
Yeah, just really fun. And, you know, I think he hit a deep one foul that he, you know, kind of pimped a little bit. And, you know, I think it's just fun to watch those guys and kind of envision where they're going to fit and just to see their development. And, you know, especially with where this team is and how good they are, I think it's fun to kind of watch these prospects with a little less on the line. You know, we've been watching these guys like Bryant, Baez, Russell, and they were kind of, you know, they were supposed to be the saviors, right? And they were. They literally were. But, you know, now we can kind of just watch these guys and just sort of, you know, with a little
less
pressure. A lighter attitude, you know? Yeah. Like, it's just more fun. That's really all it is. Like, wow, we still, you know, still have more of these guys developing. You know, it's not like everything hinges on their development so much. But and as you mentioned, I'll be curious. You know, I think Brett Anderson is someone to watch, because obviously if he's, you know, good and healthy, you know, it certainly makes what the Cubs want to do a lot easier. I know a lot of talk, I think this past week, of, you know, Montgomery sharing time in that role, if they can get somebody to, you know, produce in that regard. So I think, you know, and we mentioned them before, but guys like Brett Anderson, Eddie Butler, you know, just to see what Bosio is able to do with them and see what we're able to get out of them. But, yeah, I think I say it every episode we talk about spring training, but I wouldn't worry about anything else. I mean, if Anthony Rizzo hits 0-75 all spring, I wouldn't worry about it. If the Cubs lose every game, I wouldn't worry about it. Just make sure everybody's healthy and ready to go for when they start the season.
And enjoy it too. Take it all.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. I mean, they are the world champions. We clipped that video from the St. Louis Cardinals spring training broadcast where they're almost like choking having to say that the Cubs are the World Series champions. Yeah. You know, and so just enjoy the ride. You know, we're the kings of the castle right now. And you know, it's fun too, especially because out here in California, I guess, you know, if you have MLB TV, I was able to watch the game today. I'm not exactly positive what the rules on that are, but it was the Indians broadcast. And there's really something to every single time they do these broadcasts. The broadcast has to start with, okay, it's the Cleveland Indians and the world champion Cubs. You know, they don't play the Cubs all the time, so they have to introduce them as that. And there's just something very, very satisfying about that. So, yeah, I think that's, you know, kind of where I'm at here.
Yeah, it was just to end it here. It was funny to see Michael Martinez out in left field.
Oh, right? He was batting. I think they were showing that game on the MLB Network last night, maybe. And I, you know, wasn't paying attention, but I looked up and saw him. And I did like a double take, and I'm like, oh, this is really comforting, you know, first. Right. I can't put my finger on why, but I really like watching Michael Martinez bat now.
I know. He's got to be one of my new favorite players. But that was pretty cool. And then we'll wrap it up there. And just as a few notes as you go off into your week, John Ferlise, as Corey mentioned, is there basically every day. And I met up with John actually yesterday, and we had a nice time. And if you want any like particular videos or have any ideas of what you want to look for, although I think John does an amazing job getting to the practice fields early and trying to get what needs to be got, but any ideas, tweet at Real Cubs Insider or at Cubs Kingdom. That was his former Cubs website. But either one of those accounts, any ideas that you guys want to, you know, give us, him, for footage, don't be afraid to do that. And then just stay up to date with all of our videos, you know, be kind, share them. It's been fun to see kind of how a lot of John's videos have been spread, both in a legal and illegal way.
But if you do share it, please don't crop out our watermark.
Or put your own watermark on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, on that note, if anything crazy happens in the next week or so, we'll obviously come up and talk about it. But until then, we will talk to you guys next week.